This is Janet Gowan and
Teresa Ayers
welcoming you to another episode of Love Letters. Teresa was the one who started this with me long ago and is back today to talk about a love letter she wrote. I was so touched by it that I asked her if she would come talk about it, because one of the things that she said was that having been together as a team with love letters for so long, she really learned a lot about writing a love letter. And then she read me the letter to her pastor. You tell about him and why you did it.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I bless the day that I met Janet Gowan.
Thank you, Barbara.
Because I had learned so many things from her, and your listeners who listen regularly will know that they learn things from you every single program about how to say things graciously and how to feel things. So this goes back to our time when Janet and I were doing the radio program, and I had paid a call on my longtime pastor, someone that I've known since I was 4 years old, since our family joined this little church in Salem, Oregon. And I had been to visit him and his wife in their home. He was, of course, retired and quite elderly. That was about 5 years ago. And we had just a lovely conversation. I'd intended to make a call for about an hour. And we ended up, you know, he wouldn't let me go for 3 hours. But in that time, he told me wonderful stories that I never knew about his first church, which was the one that I belonged to. And of course, I was a small child. I was 4 years old when we met. So I didn't remember all of these things, or if I'd ever been told. And he told me many stories about that.
So anything that would be interesting for us to know about?
Well, that's in the letter.
Oh, good. Okay.
That's in the letter. And he was a remarkable person. He was, in addition to being a very wonderful pastor, he was a real salesman. He could sell ice cubes at the North Pole. And that was a good thing for him. Anyway, and during that conversation...
By the way, that is an ability that you really need, selling religion. I mean, I don't even like to use the word selling religion. You'd think it would come easier.
Well, not just religion. He just was interested in growing. He loved people. Mm-hmm. And I say love because this is past tense. Mm-hmm. He loved people, and he saw the best in them, and he wanted them to be in his congregation. And so this was his great gift, was pulling people into a community of faith, not just faith, but friendship and support for each other.
And they wanted to be because they liked him and they
yes,
felt good.
Mm-hmm. You just couldn't say no to this mm-hmm. man. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say he was a salesman. So I told him about, he told me about these stories about the church, and I told him about my love letters program, or our love letter program. And he was very taken with that. And we talked about love letters. And it turns out that I had written a love letter long time before I knew Janet, to one of the people in his congregation, this woman that was very dear to me. And without knowing I was writing a love letter, I wrote her a love letter. And she had been my Sunday school teacher. Mm-hmm. And
did you write? Oh, so you wrote it to her when you were an adult. You were
as an adult.
Class,
oh, yes. Yeah. It was in the 70s. Mm-hmm. I was painting a picket fence and I was thinking loving mm-hmm. thoughts. And mm-hmm. I went in the house and wrote this letter.
Now,
and
isn't that what this is about?
And, yeah, you know, she never responded. Her name was Flora Martin. And she never responded to me. But I was told that she carried that letter in her Bible for the rest of her life.
Oh, can we just take a break here for a minute? Oh, my goodness. Okay, I've got chills. Because sometimes we wonder, and you and I have talked about this,
yes,
what do people have a right to expect in return when you write a love letter? And we always say,
you don't have, it's a gift.
That's
and when
right.
you give a
Nothing.
Gift, you don't really have a right to expect
right.
anything.
And you can hope.
And you can hope, but the joy of giving it
right.
is, should be enough for you.
And it should be, but then you can, you know, you can still have that little hope. And if you don't ever hear anything, okay, you've still sent a wonderful gift.
Right.
But then to hear later something like this.
And she apparently showed it to many, many people.
That's interesting that she didn't indicate to you that she got it.
Well, I didn't see her anymore. She was living in Oregon, and I had moved on and had lived overseas and was living in California. And so mm-hmm. I didn't often see her. She was an elderly woman. Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect to get anything in return. I really didn't.
Of course.
But to hear people tell me that they had, mm-hmm. that Mrs. Martin had shown them that letter,
mm-hmm.
and obviously she had shown it to this pastor, Pastor mm-hmm. Lloyd
oh,
Euchre.
Oh, yes, okay.
So he knew about it. And anyway, as I was leaving his, I hope I'm not rambling too much
No, I want you to.
But as I was leaving, he said to me, I want one of those letters. I want a love letter. Will you write one to me? And that was the first time anyone...
And did you and I have a conversation about are people entitled to ask you to write a love letter?
Yes, we did.
I said, what do we say?
I forget what you said.
I think it's a nice thing if people feel comfortable enough to say, will you write me one?
Right. Well, the pastor and I had been in touch off and on throughout all of the years since I had been in his congregation. And so he felt comfortable asking, you know, and that was one of the things about him. Mm-hmm. He didn't mind asking for things. Oh. In fact, he was very good at asking for things. But you felt like you kind of owed him because he had given you so much. I just read a great quote.
What?
I forget who said it, but it was, you first give your heart before you ask for a hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had given me and my family so much. How could I deny him a love letter? Plus, I felt like it. I mean, the fact that I had gone out of my way to visit him, make a call on him.
You know, there's another issue I'm thinking just as you're talking about this. If somebody asks you to write a love letter to them, person asks, and it's somebody you like, and you would have it in your heart to do it, why not? It's such a nice thing to be asked for a favor that you can easily do, because then you have been in the wonderful position of pleasing someone you like.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, what
it's
do you
almost
do?
A favor when somebody says.
What if somebody that you really don't feel love for? I'm going to ask you, Janet. What do you do? This is a person that, you know, let's say it was just duty call and I just felt that I had to do this, but I just really
didn't somebody feel asked love you for, somebody you really, don't really like or that you don't.
Right. That I wouldn't ordinarily write a love letter to.
That's a really good question. And I think I've got something roiling around in here. I think one thing is if you feel that's in any way sarcastic or disingenuous, you can always say, I will certainly think about that. And if you sense that that person really needs some recognition, why not? Why not drop a note and, you know, mention the three things that you can think of that you like about this, or not even that you like, but strong points, and mm-hmm. send it. What does it hurt? For 46 cents, you've been a good guy.
Sounds
you've
good.
You've done a nice thing.
Right.
Yeah, I would say yes. Okay.
This was the only time I've been asked for mm-hmm. a love letter. Has anyone ever asked you for a love letter?
Couple of times. And easy to do, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So.
Well, excuse me. One person didn't ask for it, but she kind of whined. And she said, you've never sent me a love letter. And I said, well, I'm going to correct that tonight when I get home.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. You know, why not?
And I must say to your listeners, if you've never received a love letter from Janet, oh my goodness, have you missed a wonderful experience?
Thank you. Okay, well, go ahead back to Lloyd. So he asked you to do it, and you did it.
I did. I went home, and I wrote him a love letter. And, you know, I didn't hear back from him about that either, which I didn't mm-hmm. expect. But he had a way when he would send a Christmas card, it would always have a note on it of something of support.
Mm-hmm.
His final Christmas letter to me was just this past January, and the line was, keep doing what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
which in a way is affirmation, mm-hmm. it's support, you're doing the right things.
Mm-hmm.
So last November, my sister and I visited him again because he's 92 and wanted to visit him again. Oh, this is the other thing he said when I left that first time 5 years ago. This is how clever he was. I said, well, I really have to go because it was getting dark and I had about 150 miles yet to go to my destination. And I said, but I'll come back. And he said, no, you won't. He said, people say that, but they don't,
mm-hmm.
which was a challenge to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, all right, I'm going to prove you wrong.
Well, also, you're not the kind of person. I feel the same when people say that to me. I don't ever say anything I don't mean.
Right.
I'm okay at not opening my mouth once in a blue moon. But if I say something, it's going to be the truth. And
right.
When somebody doubts you, it kind of stings.
Yes, it does. And well, I don't know. Other people might react differently. But when people tell me that I won't do something,
yes.
I have to prove them
of
wrong.
Of course, that you are the honorable person that you
right.
said you were. Yeah,
right.
Of course.
So I intended to go back. And it took about 5 years before that worked up again. But my sister and I went back in November and spent another time, lovely time with him and his wife in their home. And at age 92, and he looked perfectly healthy, going strong, wonderful. But I said to my sister as we left, I wonder if that's the last time we'll see him. Well, it turns out it was, because in January I received an email from his son saying that Lloyd had passed away suddenly, and that was very sad to read. And then even more sad was that in going through Lloyd's papers and files, he had found that Lloyd had orchestrated his memorial service, and he had identified three people that he wanted to speak, and that I was one of those people.
How did that strike you?
Well, I was very touched and very honored, and I have a little trouble talking about
That's
it now.
Okay.
So it involved a quick, the memorial service was coming right up in 4 days, and so I had to come up with something. I had to come up with an airline ticket because I had to fly there, and I had to come up with something very quickly. And as emotional as I was, I thought, how will I get through this?
You mean to speak?
To speak, to give a tribute.
Yes.
And I didn't know how I could do that just talking off the cuff. So I thought, aha, I will write another love letter. And that will allow me to read it.
Yes.
And also prepare it very carefully.
Yes.
And to read it, which is what I did.
Now, you have it with you here.
I do have it with me here. Would you like to hear a little of it?
Yes. I'd like to hear as much as you care to read, because I would like the example of, you know, we talk about a love letter being filled with specifics, and a love letter that just says you're so special or you know, meant a lot to me. It's a nice sentence or two, and people mean something. But how does the person reading it know what you're talking about? Well, what special things about me is she even remembering? Mm-hmm. The gift is that you noticed and that you remembered. And so this letter was so filled with specifics that take people back on their own strongest paths. So go ahead. I would like people to hear this.
All right. Well, I would like, the way I began is something that Janet taught me and that I have used several times.
Good.
To writing to a person who is deceased.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Yes.
So I wanted the love letter to be to him, but I was giving it to his family. So that's how I started the letter, and I really love this. So it starts like this. Dear Lloyd Euchre, I'm writing this to you, but I'm delivering it to your dear family and friends who have gathered today to celebrate your life.
Perfect.
And I won't read all of you. But I said, I'm writing to tell you what a positive force you have been in my life, and I'm sure the lives of everyone else here today, and also the thousands of others you've touched directly and indirectly. But from here on, this letter is about you and me.
Perfect.
That made very permanent.
Yes.
So I talked about how we met at the Inglewood Church. We met at the Inglewood Church in Salem, Oregon, about 1949. You were the young pastor of your very first congregation. I was a preschooler who had just moved to the Inglewood neighborhood with my parents and my sister. One Sunday, my parents dropped my sister and me off at the church to attend Sunday school while they worked on some painting or building project. And then it goes on to say, when we arrived, you had our family in our sight, in your sights, and you didn't let go, which was very much the way he was.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, Sunday morning church was in two parts. First, there was Sunday school for adults and children. Then there was an hour of worship in the sanctuary with adults and children together. My earliest memories are not of your excellent sermons, but what came after as members of the congregation filed out for the customary greetings and handshakes with the pastor. I was a shy child and dreaded my family's turn at the greeting. I tried to hide behind my mother's skirts to avoid the contact. Why? Because week after week you persisted, coaxing, cajoling, teasing me to shake your hand. By your manner, I could tell you weren't going to give up. I would have to be the one that gave in. I still remember the Sunday when I built up my courage and extended my hand, and your surprise and delight in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said to the congregation, is there anyone here who cannot picture the excitement of Lloyd Euchre at that moment, at the achievement of pulling that little girl out of her shell and what the potential might be?
Mm-hmm.
That's a story I had never told him.
Uh-huh.
Or I think anyone else.
Yes.
And the joy for me in going back and telling that story was pulling up that memory. So this letter,
another wonderful thing about writing love letters is that once you start, you remember things that you didn't know you remembered.
Right.
Yes.
Yes. And then I went on to tell about the things that he did for that congregation. Mm-hmm. Actually, the three speakers, he had had three congregations in his tenure, as his life as a minister, mm-hmm. and mine was the first. So I got to go first, and I was telling stories about what he did at the Englewood Church. And it was really all about the stories were all about his personality, with that theme of how he persisted, mm-hmm. and he knew what he wanted. I will read one more anecdote that I think you particularly liked, Janet. So about how he was interviewed for the job and they hadn't really wanted him. They thought he was too young, but he set out to succeed and he put a map of Salem, Oregon on his wall and he outlined the neighborhood around the church and he made it his mission to knock on the door of every single house, mm-hmm. not just one, but twice, and just introduce himself and invite the people to come. And he had some wonderful stories for me 5 years ago when I talked with him that I didn't put in here about some of the people who turned out to be pillars of the church were not receptive to him when he first called on them. There was one fellow who was alcoholic and he hid in the basement, and whenever the doorbell rang, you know, he wouldn't come to the door, but he turned out to be a fine person and pillar of the church. Another one who was a grumpy guy and, you know, he didn't want any of this church business, but he was pulled in. And these are some of the people.
I think those alone would be wonderful stories, right, just to hear fully.
So I told about one of those stories. Mm-hmm. But then this is the paragraph that you liked, Janet, particularly. But as you admitted to me, so going back to the letter, mm-hmm. writing this love letter, but as you admitted to me on that visit 5 years ago, the climb to a large and active congregation wasn't easy. And at one point early on, you had become discouraged. You wondered if God had other plans for you. Perhaps you weren't cut out for the job after all. In your despair, you walked a short distance from the church to the local soda fountain, where the proprietor, Mel, was a member of the church. As you began to pour out your misgivings to Mel, he walked to the door, locked it, and put up the closed sign. Mel then sat on one of the stools and directed you to go behind the counter and make two sodas. As you worked scooping ice cream and adding other ingredients to the tall glasses, you continued to talk about your problems building the congregation, raising the money, failure to grow fast enough. You told him you'd been recruited by a company to sell insurance. Perhaps you could be more successful at that. When the sodas were finished and the two of you sat drinking them, Mel finally spoke. "This soda is terrible," he said. "You're not meant to make sodas, and you're not meant to sell insurance. God wants you at the Englewood Church." Yes, well, it was a different time. Salem was a small town of little houses that surrounded this church. And, well, you know, the Fuller Brush Man used to come. Now, I'm really dating myself. My mother would buy brushes. The milkman brought us milk to our door.
That's right. And you had relationships with all these people. They were really part of your life.
Right.
Yes. Well, that part's gone. But, you know, the magic that he had about him, that he could cajole a shy child and let that be your relationship.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of an interesting. So the relationship was he would cajole and you would stick your head in your mother's skirts.
Yes.
And there's something nice about that. That was okay with him. That's how you communicated.
Yes, he just had such a joy about him. Yeah. He would tease, and he was fun, and he was so sincere, and his faith was so secure, and he built as a well. Let me finish the letter.
Oh, please,
because after that, after several anecdotes, the talking about how his persistence and all that, this is how I ended my letter. "Dear Lloyd Euchre, I could fill a book with the many things I've learned from your example. The lessons have not been lost, although I'm not nearly as good as you at the execution. Here are just a few of the things I appreciate the most." And now, I've talked about each of them, but now I spell them out.
Oh, good.
"Your joy of life, everything big and small, your love of family and friends, building churches and congregations, and encouraging others to be the best they can be, even growing tomatoes in pots. Your love of people and your ability to see hidden talents and strengths. Because you listened, believed, supported, and nurtured, the rest of us are stronger and wiser. Your wisdom and tenacity. your generosity in supporting others and letting them shine. Finally, but certainly not all, your talent in creating communities of faith where people care about and support each other. I am the fortunate recipient of one such community, the Village of the Englewood Church. The people on whose doors you knocked, the people you befriended, invited, encouraged, pestered to join the congregation, excuse me, these people became part of my extended family and are some of the ones who continue to sit in the grandstand of my life. I'm aware of their watchful eyes. Am I meeting their high expectations? Am I doing the right things? Am I doing enough? What more can I do? Dear Lloyd Euchre, I credit many of my achievements to that first handshake that acknowledged me as an individual, to the lessons you taught with intent and by example, to your ongoing faith that I would do the right things, and to our treasured friendship of more than 60 years.
That is gorgeous. Thank you very much. You just touch on so many really important things in letter writing and in relationships. And when you talked about, you indicated that this church, the community of this church, mm-hmm. are people that you had to be accountable to in a way. And how nice.
And still am.
Yeah, well, yes. I, that's right. You did make that clear. So am I doing the right thing? And I think that's a question that people don't ask themselves often enough in this world.
It really speaks to, and I'm so,
I have a reputation to keep up, is what it used to be.
Yes. Uh-huh. And I still feel so strongly about that, the importance of us mentoring others, guiding small children.
Well, look how many relationships you've done that within your own life.
And you build expectations for them, high expectations, mm-hmm. hopes for them. I strongly believe that people will live up to what's expected
of
them.
Oh, yes, and high expectations. If you could tell me a bigger compliment, go ahead.
Yes.
Yes. That you poor thing, you can't really do this, I'll make an exception.
Right.
Is just such an insult.
Right.
Yes.
So he did that in spades. Actually, he went on after he left this little church in Salem. Mm-hmm. He's just such a marvelous person. He would start a prayer group, mm-hmm. and they'd meet in the some room in the church basement, and then they'd have to meet at the back of a restaurant, mm-hmm. because more people wanted to join.
Wow.
And then they would have to get hold calls, mm-hmm. because people wanted to be part of this. And he knew to include well-known people, mm-hmm. such as the governor of Oregon, mm-hmm. such as Rosie Greer, the football player.
Sure.
He would pull those people in, and that had a way of attracting other people. And he really got his message out. And so
wonderful.
He was still doing those kinds of things. He still had a regular prayer group of a weekday prayer group of, 50 or 60 people the day he died.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's such an example.
I'm so glad I know him just even a little bit through your description. what was the reaction, may I ask? And he had family members there?
Oh, yes. His family, his wife and two sons and daughter-in-law and granddaughters were there. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, this is another thing about the letter. I was already seated in the church, and this was one of the churches that he had built, literally mm-hmm. built. Mm-hmm. He'd brought the architect in and all of that. And I was sitting in the front row waiting for my turn to talk. The family came in, and they were all in tears, mm-hmm. all of them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, my goodness, they're sitting in the front row. How am I going to get through this?
Oh, they were in tears before you.
Before I started, uh-huh. yes. As they came in, they were mm-hmm. all in tears. And I thought, how am I going to get through this? I'm so glad that I can read this tribute rather
yes.
than just say
yes.
it, because I'm going to be looking at them. Mm-hmm. But they weren't crying as I read it. As I read it, there was actually a lot of laughter,
uh-huh.
because the
yes.
things that I wrote were so typical of him yes. that the people there, it was quite a large crowd, could see that.
And how important it is, and how, I mean, it makes sense that even in a time of grief and when you're just so bereft over a loss, that you still get to laugh,
mm-hmm.
and it's an honor to the person,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't disrespect anybody's pain to be able to laugh.
Right.
Yes.
So afterwards, many people came up to me mm-hmm. and told me what a wonderful letter it was. One woman came up and said, do you teach people how to write love letters?
Yes, you do. Yeah.
And so that was quite rewarding as well, and I must say it was just it was lovely. And I also want to say that this was not a letter that I whipped up in 15 minutes.
Oh, I was going to ask you to say something about that. No.
It was easy to write. It was easy to draft the first time because mm-hmm. all of these memories came. And I had a time limit. His son had asked me to, you know, 5 or 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. Well, it actually took me about 10 minutes mm-hmm. to read this, mm-hmm. but that was okay.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me.
Well, Janet, it's always a pleasure.
Yes. And anything else you have to say, come share it.
All right.
This is such an important thing. And this is, and by the way, we have about another 30 seconds. I want to say that you can write these kind of letters while people are living, if you care to, and they will be very likely brought out at the funeral mm-hmm. as part of the eulogies. Love letters as eulogies are a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. Well, that was just gorgeous. Thank you so much, dear.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for coming back. And remember, as we always say, I think Teresa was the first to say it, be sure to say
what you feel while you have the chance.
Yes, say what you feel while you still have the chance, which I have taken over saying a lot. And that doesn't mean that you don't still have a chance to say a lot of beautiful things just because somebody's gone, because you see that you do. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to leave something in your handwriting for that family. Yeah. So if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, it's always a special occasion when you do write that love letter.
Absolutely.
So, until next time, thank you and goodbye from Janet.
And Teresa.
Bye.
Bye.